Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
Now, due to the international break, there was not much action from our Yorkshire teams, with the exception of Bradford City, who went head-to-head with Notts County, which we will cover later on in this episode, and Harrogate Town, who played out a 1-1 draw when they welcomed Swindon Town to the Envirovent Stadium, which we'll also be having a look at in more detail. But let's actually start, as I mentioned earlier, with Bradford City, who are still looking for their first league win under new manager Graham Alexander, after they fell to a disappointing 4-2 defeat away at Notts County, which is now their fourth consecutive league defeat. The Bantams fell behind inside the first 5 minutes of the game and were 4-0 down by half-time. And even though they were able to stage some sort of fight back in the second half, it wasn't enough to stop them from missing out on claiming points from the fixture. What were your thoughts on the game, and where do Bradford City improve ahead of their upcoming game against Accrington Stanley, Leon?
Well, it was, disappointing is one word, Mark. It was just a bit of a strange game all round. I mean, they were obviously 4-0 down at half time, and it was one of those you would be sort of sat there watching it, as bad as Bradford were, and they were all over the place defensively in the first half. You know, Notts County were very good. I've seen a few games at this level over the years, and sort of going forward, they were outstanding. Obviously, got Macaulay Langstaff, he was banging in the goals as they got promoted from the National League. He's carried on where he's left off, and just behind him, McGoldrick and Crowley were just pulling the strings throughout the first half. I mean, Stuart Pellegrino, and McGoldrick's far, he's far too good for the League Two. There's no way he should be operating. So they were very good, Notts County, but he did get it wrong, Graham Alexander, and to his credit, he admitted that pretty much afterwards. He'd gone with a back four that obviously had been used in the games, prior to him arriving. I think he'd gone with that against Barrow, and they were just torn apart. Just the four goals in the first half. But to be fair, he sort of administered the masterclass, if you like. He went 3-5-2, and he'll basically along the lines of, let's look, we're gonna get beaten here, but let's claw back a bit of pride and win the second half. And to be fair, I think there was an element of Notts County clocking off psychologically, and I know the manager was pretty scathing afterwards, but credit to Bradford, to some degree. They brought Matty Platt on. He played in, they took Ash Taylor off, brought Matty Platt on the right hand side of a three with Sam Stubbs and Kieran Kelly, and then went to wing backs, Halliday and Lewis Richards, and he was better. Richards looked he looked rough, it's fair to say, at left back, and he looked a fair bit more comfortable at wing back. And they clawed a couple of goals back. The fans, who were understandably grumpy in the first half and turned a little bit on the owner, Stephen Roux, they bought into it a bit more. Quite a lot of chances, Bradford, and a bit more respectability to the scoreline. I suppose the problem is, I know Stuart mentioned it before the game to me, that this sort of penchant for conceding very early goals flared up again. That's an issue going forward. But Yeah, to be fair, I mean, they had a game in, I mean, it was at some level a dead rubber, but managers won't say that, will they, on Tuesday night, the EFL Trophy. We're already through to the knockouts, the last 32. But he went fairly strong against Barnsley. I think it was about five or six of the players who played at Notts County started. And a nice little morale boost, admittedly, against, you know, the Barnsley side, who only had about, you know, probably three or four first-teamers, if you like. 1-5-1, Andy Cook got a goal. Tyler Smith looked decent. They looked decent in the 3-5-2 as well. They looked, you know, the pressing was good and the intent, and it was front foot. I mean, small acorns, really. I mean, you know, the big game this week will be the home game against Accrington, but he might have dropped onto something with that system. I just sort of look at Bradford defensively, and without being too cruel, I don't think they've got really an outstanding central defensive pairing. So, sort of for me, when I look at that, I think you're better to have sort of three than two. And to be fair, in the summer when they were recruiting players, it was sort of done around doing it to play a 3-5-2. But it was sort of jettisoned pretty early by Mark Hughes. You know, the fans weren't particularly happy with that system. But yeah, it's had a bit of a refit potentially, and it's see how Alexander goes in the weeks ahead. So, but yeah, funny week, you know, dreadful first half against Notts County, bit of encouragement afterwards, bit of a morale boost against Tuesday, but it's, you know, it really is about getting some points on the board now. It's, you look at Bradford, they're closer to the bottom relegation positions than they are the top seven, which is ridiculous and very disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really, really difficult week to judge, you know, because there was yeah. good and there was bad, and the bad was very bad. But yeah, it did feel as though that change of formation, you know, might have got them onto something. But, you know, as Leon says, it is hard to judge because it is true to say that Notts County clocked off in that second half, and it is true to say that the midweek win was a dead rubber. So we'll have to reserve a bit of judgment. But I agree with Leon. I think just the safety in numbers when they need to clearly, you know, build a platform at the moment, you know, it could be the way to go for them. And I just feel as though sometimes, you know, you get the new manager bounce, and it can disguise a few problems that are there. Well, you know, this time the problems were all laid out, you know, on national television in that first half at Meadow Lane. You know, it wasn't just the quantity of the goals, it was the manner of them as well, the way they sat off Notts County and let them play around them. You know, that wasn't anything to do with formations, that was a real mindset issue. But I say that, you know, there were positives. Andy Cook missed a great chance that could have made it 4-3. It could have been very interesting then. You know, I thought the way Brad Halliday really fought in the second half, I thought that sort of marked him out as somebody who, you know, Alexander will have, yeah, exactly. That will have marked him out as someone who Alexander will have thought, you know, I can work with him here. And you know, having said that about Cook's miss, and there were a few others in that game, you know, the fact that he got one in midweek, regardless of who they were playing, what competition they were playing in or anything like that, the fact that he's got a goal, hopefully that will just kickstart him, because they, you know, they do need his goals. They were obviously very reliant on them last season, and they've struggled without so many of them this season. I mean, he's got seven. He's not exactly doing terribly, but it's certainly not at the standard he was. So yeah, hopefully this has sort of brought some of the issues out into the open early for Graham Alexander. And, you know, he does certainly seem like the sort of manager who will try and confront them head on. So, you know, it might be grasping at straws a bit after what was a terrible defeat. But it could be that in the long run, getting this out of the way early actually does Bradford some good. I say we won't be saying that if they then lose against Accrington, lose against Forest Green. You know, it has to be the start of something. But It does feel as though there's the potential for this to actually not have been as bad a as bad a week as it really felt at half time in that last County game.
Yeah, he's seen the problems early, hasn't he, Stuart? Which I think there's an argument to say that's not necessarily a bad thing. He's certainly got a lot of work to do. There's obviously an intense schedule, you know, between now and the end of the year. But you know, I think the overall sort of squad evaluation as well, that's gonna sort of come into it. Not for the first time. I mean, it just looks a big squad, Bradford, doesn't it? I know there's one or two players to come back as well. I mean, you can throw Oliver back in the mix and Chapman, and then is it Alex Patterson as well. You know, he'll be an important player when he comes back. But you know, you look at some of the players who weren't in the squad, it doesn't look particularly good for the one or two of the loan players for sure. Tulloch and Afoka have not featured in any of his matchday squads so far. So you would have thought that they'll be going back in January. You would have thought the situation with Jake Young. So there's going to be I think there'll be a certain amount of realignment and trimming, and he'll be assessing the players all the time to see who we can trust and fits into the way that he wants to do things. I mean, when Graham was unveiled, he spoke about sort of being adaptable in his sort of systems and sort of looking at the personnel he's got and which way they'll sort of go formation wise. And yeah, I mean, time will tell. And Stuart made a good point that we've been here before with Bradford. We've had sort of, you get a sort of decent result here and there, and there's a tendency to go overboard, and then to go and throw a couple of bad results in. So yeah, they need to get back on. And I think the first thing is getting back on track in the league. You know, big game against Accrington on Saturday and getting some points on the board.
Yeah, that, you know, they need to get a clear idea of where they're going. You know, this squad has been reshaped this summer to play three at the back. So if he is happy, if it turns out he is happy with three at the back, well, it makes things a bit easier. But if not, then he does need to think, you know, if he ultimately decides he's more comfortable with a back four, he needs to find a partner for Sam Stubbs. You know, he needs to look at certain areas of the field and balancing things up. I think, you know, you would assume that they would recall Jake Young in mid-season. There is a recall clause in there, I believe, and he's got 13 goals this season, so it seems like a bit of a no-brainer. So that will instantly make things, you know, a lot more promising. Hopefully, he can then strike up a good partnership with Andy Cook, and off we go. But as Leon's already alluded to, there's a lot of games before we get to January, and Bradford can't just afford to tread water. They really need to nail things down at the back, and then build from there. Because you know, the playoffs are very rarely out of reach in the Football League just because of the system. But right now they don't need to be thinking about that. They need to be shutting the back door and making sure that they don't get sucked closer to the relegation picture. Because you know, at the moment, it's not panic stations. But if they allow things to drift, you know, things could get a lot more uncomfortable.
And next we turn our attention to Harrogate Town, who had to settle for a point when they played out a 1-1 draw when they welcomed Swindon Town. This now leaves Harrogate Town in 14th place, just 6 points off the playoff spots. What was your assessment of the game, and how do you feel that things are going for our Yorkshire teams as a whole in this division, Stuart?
Well, I mean, from a Harrogate Town perspective, you know, it was a step forward. A draw was the first point they'd taken at home since August. You know, they've been very good away from home, but it's the home form. Sorry, yes, they've been very good away from home, but it's the form at Weatherby Road that's been letting them down. So you know, to take a point against Swindon, that was definitely a step in the right direction. It seems like they've finally drawn a line under the Luke Armstrong situation. It doesn't seem like he's going to be playing any more football for them until the January transfer window opens. I mean, that's been a really damaging situation for them. You know, Wrexham's inability to get what should have been quite a straightforward deal from their perspective done with a month's notice has really, you know, done some harm to Harrogate, it feels anyway, looking from the outside. So I hope things can be resolved in January. I hope he can move early in the window for his sake. He'll need the football and for, you know, for Harrogate's sake, so they can move on. I hope if it is Wrexham who come back in for him, then the disruption they've caused is reflected in the new price for him. But yeah, I mean, generally things seem to be moving in the right direction. Simon Weaver was talking very positively after the game. You know, we often talk about some of the teams in Yorkshire, about what's realistic for them with their budgets. And, you know, for Harrogate to be sat in 14th place at the moment above Bradford and Doncaster is a big tick in the box, as you say, to be only 6 points outside the playoffs. Things are moving in the right direction. Things are positive, and they're just as they usually do at Harrogate. They're showing the value of just holding their nerve. Mm-hmm. When things get a little bit sticky, they've got a manager who they obviously trust in massively, having you know, been there so long. And whereas other clubs, you'll see the knee-jerk reaction where they go in a bad run, Harrogate have sort of got into the habit of riding these things out. And, you know, hopefully it will work to their advantage this season.
Yeah, I agree with what Stuart said. I mean, they have took a few knocks and had some bumps in the road, not just this season, you know, but the last couple as well. And, you know, they were still a relatively new Football League club. But they have shown the character. They obviously stopped the rot, if you like, with the draw at home after the run of home defeats. And, yeah, I mean, it's just sort of getting the home form back on an even keel in the sort of here and now. I think they've only got 7 points at home this season, and they've got over double that away from home. So, you know, they've certainly been, you know, on that area of the season, they're certainly getting right. And, you know, it's just been a little bit, Weaver was speaking about it the other week, a bit more proactive in the final third and positive. But, you know, there is mitigation in the fact that, obviously, Armstrong, you know, under usual circumstances, a big player for Harrogate, isn't he? But it's been a bit of a backdrop to the season, hasn't it? Obviously, it all started on the opening day when they thought he wasn't capable of taking the field at Doncaster because of all the sort of speculation regarding his future and Wrexham. And Stuart's right to say that it needs to be sorted out, you know, sooner rather than later, and ideally right at the start of the window. So, you know, with a bit of luck, Harrogate will, he's spoken about it before, Weaver, getting a replacement in before he allows him to go. Hopefully they'll line somebody up. So, obviously, when Armstrong goes wherever he goes, that they've got a shoe in for a replacement. So, I think that'll be important. But, yeah, I mean, she showed and had a few questions asked about them. Show the character and the metal, and against Swindon, and by all accounts, it was a bit more encouraging.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, Harrogate sort of got a replacement in when Armstrong went, but because of the sort of rush nature of it and the fact they were forced into it, they brought Josh Marsh in when he's clearly not been fully fit. And, you know, as a result, they've only had 3 starts out of him this season. They've only had 6 out of Luke Armstrong and 1 league goal between them. So clearly, Leon's right. They do need to bring in another striker. But it's just a consequence, really. And it's really annoying when this happens. Whether it's your club behind it or your club on the receiving end. You know, most transfers, there's excuses. Oh, we're in a chain and we're waiting for this and we're waiting for that. They had a club who knew who they wanted. They had the money to buy him. They knew who the price was. And they did it, and they did it, and they did it, and they left it, not just to the last minute, but to a couple of minutes after the last minute. And it's just really frustrating when clubs can't get their business done in time, and it's really hurt Harrogate this time. But you know that is the nature of it. You've just got to get on with it. Unfortunately, when you are a club like Harrogate, you're not able to dictate terms like clubs like Wrexham can. You have to sort of patiently wait your time, and they've been bitten by it. But, you know, for all of that,
as we've just said, you know, they're 14th in the table. They're coming through this. They're getting the best out of Sam Vlahos, and they're continuing to get goals out of Jack Muldoon. They're finding ways through it, and that's what you've got to do. And that's the nature of it. Sometimes, as I say, you do have these sticky spells, and you've just got to battle your way through them. And you know, when you talk about the division generally, obviously we've mentioned Bradford, our other club, Doncaster. They're just having a slightly sticky time of it at the moment in the league, partly just because they're not having many fixtures at the moment. There's, you know, lots of cup games sort of disrupting the rhythm and things like that. And it just feels as though a season that was threatening to get going a while ago still hasn't really, you know, really, really got up and running in the way it should be. But again, you know, there's mitigating circumstances. They've had a lot of injuries. There's things to be positive about. I mean, Leon and I have both seen Doncaster this season and been very impressed, I think it's fair to say, by Joe Ironside and Mo Farr. And the, you know, the partnership they've got up front. They've still this season got to get George Miller on the field and up and running. And you know, hopefully, if either of those two strikers have a dip, it comes at a time when Miller is up and running and back in the goals. But yeah, I think there's, although the league position is troubling, and it's certainly, you know, 19th at this stage of the season is way below where most fans would have hoped they would be at the start of the season. Again, I don't think it's cause for panic. As I said earlier, you know, it takes an awful lot to be out of the playoff picture in the Football League. They will have to put a good run together to get there, but it's still within their grasp. So I think, you know, like I just said about Harrogate, it's the same really with Doncaster. Keep your nerve, get through it. There is enough talent there, I think, to, you know, to get some closer to the season they were expecting this year.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at, you know, it's not just been three or four players who've been out at times at Doncaster. You know, you've been talking double figures, haven't you? Which is,
yeah,
that's the barometer of what he's had to contend with, Grant McCann. And yeah, I mean, I think it would be nice for sort of Doncaster's well-being. You look at the last sort of two or three years, and you know, the second half of the season have been, you know, absolutely atrocious, and you know, sometimes going into free fall. So, you know, hopefully it'd square the circle a little bit where they can actually have a bit more of a positive run, which, it sort of goes against the grain for Grant McCann. He's usually the sort of other way, so the mate, his teams usually make, you know, strong starts. It's been a bit of a, you know, a tricky first half of the season for Doncaster, but I agree with what Stuart said. I mean, there's, you know, I think the actual system, you know, you go in, you know, in League Two, where they can finish seventh place and sneak in the playoffs and still got a chance, you know, that can sort of encourage some teams. I remember, donkeys years ago now, when Bradford made a late charge in the spring and ended up going up. So, you know, there's usually in a season, there's in that division, there's one or two who can make a late run and sneak into the playoffs, and you know, that's what Doncaster will be hoping. You know, players to come back. You know, Stuart's mentioned that's George Miller, and you know, those two. Tommy Rowe's out at the minute. Sterry, the right back as well, and start the season well. You know, hopefully one or two players coming into form as well. Which, well, yeah, I wouldn't discount Doncaster at the minute. You know, they've had that bit of disruption with the fixtures, but you know, there's some ticks in the box as well, and you know, Ironside and Farrell up front have looked the part for spells, and there's some decent players to work with there, so I don't think all is lost there yet.
And now we head to Barnsley, who, even though weren't in action over the weekend, they have been in the news following their expulsion from this season's FA Cup after fielding an ineligible player during their game against Horsham. I wanted to get your thoughts on the situation and how their season has been so far. I mean, they currently sit in sixth, 8 points off the top two, and their next game is a trip to Lincoln City. How have you found the Tykes so far this season, Leon?
Yeah, I think, you know, important first first of all, to, you know, to mention the fact that they picked up the FA Cup, building an ineligible player, and yeah, it's just headlines that a club can do without, and, you know, certainly supporters, you know, you look at Barnsley over the past few years, and they've had a lot of other clubs been in the spotlight, a lot of, sort of, you know, unfavourable headlines, really, you know, earlier this season, there were the EFL charging with, you know, breaches regarding ownership shareholdings. That case hasn't been sort of finalised yet. We don't know what's going to happen there yet. We've obviously got the latest thing with the ineligible player. I mean, the club aren't saying anything, but from what we understand, it came as a result of they brought back Aidan Marsh from York City on the 6th of November, which was the Monday. He actually played the first game against Horsham on the Friday, the 3rd. Obviously, Marsh was still at York, and, you know, to be eligible to play for the in the replay, you've got to be available for the first game. And, you know, technically, he was still on loan at York. So, obviously, a big and regrettable mistake from Barnsley, and an elementary one, to be fair. But yeah, I just feel for the supporters there. We've had the stuff about the last season when the controversial closing of the West Stand. There was all the stuff with the sponsor, the cryptocurrency sponsor, and, you know, the negative headlines regarding that. There was some allegations of discriminatory language. So yeah, it's headlines that Barnsley could have done without in that regard. On the pitch, it's been a bit of a mixed bag, really, hasn't it? They've been pretty strong away from home. Only lost one game in League One on the road at Derby. You know, the 5 or 6 wins on the trot away from home at one point. And it was, you know, it's been looking okay, but they have struggled against some of the leading sides at home. They've been beaten to the likes of Portsmouth, Peterborough and Oxford. So they're sort of in the playoff mix, but I wonder if that's maybe more to do with the fact that, we've mentioned this before, myself and Stuart, that I don't think it's the strongest division, League One, this season. Certainly not as strong as the last two campaigns. So I think, you know, it's going to be this run of games for a lot of clubs between now and the end of the calendar year. You know, sorts out a few teams out, and I'll be interested to see how Barnsley fare, because I think they've still got one or two issues at the back, and I just wonder in January, it can be it's proved to be a critical time at Barnsley, and you would expect, you look at some of the players, Devante Cole's out of contract in the summer, he's not got his future sorted yet. He's been outstanding, really, for the last year or so, and there was interest in him at the end of the summer window, and I'm pretty sure there'll be some in January as well. The clock's ticking on some other players as well. Herbie Kane, you know, another key player for Barnsley, he's up next summer. Captain Jordan Williams as well. So obviously, you know, the likes of Callum Stiles is a Hungary international. They've obviously gone into a tournament next summer. Will he want to be sticking around in League One all season? And Nicky Cavan as well, he's out of contract in the summer. He's a big player for Barnsley. So yeah, I think with Barnsley, it's probably ask myself and Stuart at the end of January.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Barnsley obviously had an excellent coach last season. Neil Collins has made a decent start this season. They need to raise the standards off the field to match them on it. You know, the whole FA Cup thing, it's an embarrassment, but it's an expensive one as well. I mean, you know, you see it a lot in the qualifying rounds of the FA Cup with teams being thrown out for this sort of thing. But they're teams, you know, run by volunteers. This is a professional outfit, and you know, they clearly are very embarrassed by it. They should be, but I say that there's more than just that. You know, there's also the fact that they're drawn to play Sutton United away in the next round. I mean, you only need to look at the league table to see they would have been the favourites in that tie to go through to the third round. And that, you know, the third round is the big one in terms of finances. You know, that would no doubt have a knock-on effect in terms of Neil Collins' budget for January. So, yeah, it's been an embarrassing time for Barnsley. And yeah, in terms of on the field, you know, it just feels as though, obviously, they've been so good away from home, as Leon mentioned, until that Derby County defeat. But the fact that it was Derby County, another one of those teams who we expect to be contending for promotion, it just kind of fits into this pattern of they can sort of beat the teams, I won't say below them, because Derby are just about still below them, but, you know, the teams in the next sort of tier down. But it's the teams that they should be competing with. They're not quite up to that level yet. And so the next couple of games are going to be interesting because Lincoln are within striking distance of them. They've got a new manager in Michael Scabala, so we'll wait to see, you know, if that has an effect. They beat Leighton Orient in the week. So, you know, will they be a more sort of confident Lincoln City than they were earlier? Although, to be fair, it wasn't the results that were the issue under Michael Kennedy, by all accounts. And then they've got Wickham, who again are another team who I think they're 12th at the moment, but you'd expect them to be in and around it. So two teams who will be a real test of Barnsley, one away, one at home, to just see where exactly this team is. But I don't think they're a million miles away on the field. But as Leon sort of reeled off numerous examples there, they do keep shooting themselves in the foot off the field. And, you know, it's off the field where they really have to play a strong part in January in terms of keeping that squad together, you know, reinforcing it where necessary and making sure that they go into the second half of the season stronger, because clearly as they are right now, they're just about where they need to be, and you never want to be just about where you need to be. You know, you want that comfort of being that bit stronger and that bit, have that bit more insurance when, you know, things inevitably go wrong.
Yeah,
I think you'll just find out how serious they are about getting promotion, Stuart, won't it, really?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. If Barnsley lose, you know, two or three fourths of the leading players, it's going to be a hell of a struggle to get into the top six, isn't it? And, you know, I sort of mentioned earlier that, you know, with respect to the division, I don't think it's quite as strong as it was last season. So there's, you know, there should be an opportunity for one or two teams, and yeah, we're just going to have to see how it pans out for Barnsley. And, you know, I think penny for the thoughts of Neil Collins when he obviously found out about about getting kicked out of the FA Cup. I mean, Stuart's right to say that as well. I mean, I think it's something like, just had a look, it's 67,000 if you win this in the second round. But, you know, if you do get a big fish, if you get a draw at Old Trafford or Anfield, you know, you're talking about a, you know, a nice little six figure sum there. So yeah, there'll be a little bit of anger, I would have thought, if the winners of the Horsham Sutton tie draw one of the big fish in the new year. And I think as well, you know, if you do that as a club, it can sort of inspire league form, can't it? You know, so, you know, Barnsley had stood in the cup, they've gone to Sutton, won that, got a draw against, you know, a big team in the Premier League. It can sort of drive on league form as well, but unfortunately Barnsley have lost that side of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're talking about Doncaster earlier. We're in kind of a phase of the season for those clubs who were losing matches to, who lost matches to the international break, where it is just very bitty in league terms, you know. And if you look at Barnsley's last four games, draw against Horsham in the cup, then that defeat at Derby. Yes, they beat Horsham in the replay, and then, you know, to lose in that trophy game, which, you know, as we've already said, dead rubber and all that sort of thing, but it just chips away at that momentum. And it just feels like Barnsley, a bit like Doncaster, from obviously a much more comfortable position, need to just build up a bit of momentum again, and certainly capable of it. But it's just that phase of the season where it could go either way for them. Either this bitterness could continue, or this could be a moment that sort of gets them back on track.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one slight positive is Luke O'Connell getting back into the mix. I think it'll take him a little while to get up to speed again. But yeah, he was a huge player for Barnsley last season. He got in the PFA League One Team of the Year. He's back from a debilitating illness. He's started the last two games. He's featured in just over an hour. You know, captaining both of them as well. So, you know, that is one positive for Barnsley at the minute. But they could, they could do with a few more. The Sam Cosgrove still hasn't. He's had a frustrating time, not able to get off the mark yet. And I've still got one or two issues as well about them at the back. Not just because of the other day, but they've shown a bit of a propensity to give away some daft goals this season. So I think that's a side of it that Collins will be hoping to sort out sooner rather than later.
And now we turn to the England men's team, who recorded a 2-0 victory against Malta and a 1-1 draw against North Macedonia. This now sees the Three Lions qualify as one of the top seeded teams for Euro 2024 in Germany next year. What did you think of the two performances, and what do you think Gareth Southgate will have learned from his team's performances in those two games, Stuart?
Well, I mean, the two performances, frankly, were pretty poor. But you've got to look at the bigger picture and the whole qualifying picture. And as you say, they've qualified as one of the top seeds. You know, they did play poorly, but they won one of those games, they drew the other. You know, but for a few debatable decisions, they might have won both of them. It's hardly end of the world stuff. And, you know, I do think we've seen Gareth Southgate experiment a little bit in these two games, which I think was really important, because, you know, we always talk when international tournaments come round about how little time and how little preparation time there is. You know, two friendlies before Southgate has to name his squad for the tournament. So I think it was important he looked at a few different things, and, you know, even the things that didn't work, it's good to know that they didn't work. You know, I didn't think Tomori at left back was a particularly successful experiment, but I think Alexander-Arnold in midfield worked reasonably well, certainly worked well against Malta. I think the majority of that team is pretty clear cut. I think there's only a few places up for grabs, really, if everyone stays fit. Clearly, Jude Bellingham was a big loss. But if you look at the nature of England's squad, brilliant a player though Bellingham is, that is one position that they should be able to cover. So that was a disappointment, really, that, you know, Foden and people like that didn't really step up and grasp that opportunity. But let's be honest, the issue with England hasn't been struggling against the lesser teams. It's been how they lift themselves against the very best. So, you know, you can't get too upset about them making heavy weather of beating Malta, because we've seen them blow Malta away in Malta. We saw them hammer North Macedonia at Old Trafford. You know, we've seen them carry out some really big beatings against the lesser teams. So I don't think in the long run that is an issue. I do think Southgate needs to work out who's going to be that midfielder who plays between Rice and Bellingham. I would suggest Alexander-Arnold is the best bet, but we'll have to wait and see. I think other than that, I think the left side of the attack, that's still to be nailed down, but there's plenty of options. And then other than that, I think, you know, if Luke Shaw gets his fitness back and gets back to where he is, I think that position's dealt with. Bit of concern about the cover, but the position itself is fine. And, you know, we wait to see how much football Calvin Phillips gets, if he moves in January and puts himself more firmly in contention by playing more games, and if Harry Maguire can stay in the Manchester United team, because obviously that's been a concern about him. But this is the first window in a long time where he's actually gone into it with a decent amount of football.
I just think it was a bit of a funny one this break, wasn't it? I mean, quite a lot of players, you know, pulled out with injury. You know, Bellingham's, and you know, there's like Stones and Maddison and you know, you mentioned Shaw as well, and you know, the fact that they'd actually qualified, the main job was done. You know, it was just a case of Southgate looking at a few things and whether they worked or not, you know, looking at, you know, certain players and, you know, some ticks in the box. Obviously, I had a look at Cole Palmer, you know, Lewis as well, and Alexander Arnold in midfield. And, you know, if you're going to have a few sort of issues in an international season, you want them, you know, in November, really, don't you?
Because, yes.
You know, before the spring when that matters. So I wouldn't be too hard on England, even though they weren't particularly great watchers, were they? Let's be honest. But yeah, I think look at the players who weren't available. Some of the real sort of big hitters as well. You know, certainly, you know, Stones, Shaw, and 1,000,000% Bellingham. You know, will be in the England team in Germany. And I think it's just going to be interesting going forward, looking at. See, you know, Southgate's got some decisions to make. You know, there's, you know, Jordan Henderson, will he get on the plane? There's the Raheem Sterling situation. I'll be, you know, interested to see how, you know, Ivan Toney will come back into the fray. If he starts getting some goals, can he sort of put his hand up as well? So, yeah, I'd say I wouldn't be too hard on England, even though it was disappointing. But let's see what the, you know, what the new year brings, and then, you know, we'll really start the countdown to the tournament then.
Yeah.
I think an encouraging thing as well, you know, Ezri Konsa didn't get on the pitch, but the way Rico Lewis, for all that he conceded that penalty, I mean, I think it was a very soft penalty. I don't think I'd hold that against him. But, you know, the debuts that him and Cole Palmer against Malta made were encouraging. You know, the fact that they seemed to slip quite comfortably into international football. They both give good options. I mean, Lewis is incredibly versatile. Palmer is in an attacking sense. So it's nice to know that there's those options there. And we have to remember as well, you know, we saw 180 minutes of those players, but we know how Southgate operates. A lot of it is about seeing how these guys do in training, how they interact with each other. Obviously, we've no real idea how that went, but he'll have learned a lot from that. You know, he'll have seen a lot from just how sharp Henderson and Phillips were in training. You know, one for having played in the UAE, one for not having played at all, sort of thing. And I do think there are big decisions over those two. And personally, I think, you know, if their situations don't change, I'm pretty certain Henderson's won't. I don't think they're players you can rely on. You know, if there's others pushing, but you know, there's always injuries to muddy the water as well. At the moment, you know, Leon's reeled off all those players who are absolutely nailed on to play if they're fit. But you know, we know what it's like. Somebody's metatarsal could go, and suddenly you have to find a replacement for John Stone. So you know, Mark Gay's performance was encouraging in that respect. And you know, or maybe Kyle Walker gets injured, and suddenly you're glad that Rico Lewis has come in so well. So yeah, it's just about keeping your options.
It takes a chance on the injured players as well, Stuart, isn't it? You know, done that before.
It is.
So that's going to be one to consider.
Yeah, I found it encouraging from my point of view. Someone who's quite risk averse when it comes to this sort of thing, about him saying that he will probably take fewer risks because he'll have three fewer players. I do think sometimes you can get away. You can always get away with a gamble or two, but I think if you've got good players underneath, I think why do it? You know, why take a risk with Calvin Phillips if you've got a player of James Ward-Prowse's quality, just for argument's sake, to come in? Or, you know, if Jude Bellingham's having a problem, you know, why take a risk if you've got Phil Foden there and that sort of thing? But these are all things he's going to have to weigh up. I say it was just about getting as much out of that fortnight as you could, and I think the circumstances they probably did. I couldn't really care less what the results were, as long as they finished as the top seeds, which they did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And finally for this week, we turn to Rotherham United, who at the time of recording are still searching for a new manager since they decided to bring Matt Taylor's tenure to an end. Leon, has there been any updates on who could be in the frame for the job?
In a word, no, Mark. We're obviously speaking before the the Leeds United game, they've been compiling a shortlist. I've understood it. It's in the region of 5 or 6 of the candidates. I spoke to Tony Stewart last week. You know, he was enthused by the quality of the candidates, some good quality. And, chairman, as is the what they're going to say, things like that sometimes, aren't they? But yeah, I think he was genuine in what he was in what he was saying. And from what I understand, there's some good senior, you know, championship ready operators who have thrown the hat into the ring and you know, have expressed interest in taking over of them. So yeah, he's made no bones about the fact that Tony Stewart, that he wants to bring in, is somebody who sort of walked the walk at this level as, you know, senior operator. So that, yeah, one or two names in the mix who've you know, sort of been mentioned in dispatches already. Gary Rowett has obviously got plenty of experience, you know, with the likes of Millwall. Liam Richardson, who's been linked with the Rotherham job before, he's experienced there from not as much as Rowett, obviously, but from his time at Wigan. Plenty of other candidates as well who haven't been mentioned, but yeah, it's a huge decision for Rotherham, isn't it? Obviously, we've spoken a hell of a lot at length about, you know, the dreadful away form that they've had, and it's, you know, bedeviling, you know, not just this season but previous seasons at this level. But yeah, the clock's certainly ticking. I mean, they've got the Leeds game on Friday. Then it's a relatively short turnaround to play Hull in midweek next week. Then they've got another game on the Saturday, so they really need to be, you know, after the Leeds game, however which way it goes, they really need to start, you know, whittling it down and seeing who they want, really, because, you know, they want the manager sort of, you know, in with a fair spell of December. Still to go, so there's quite a few games for everyone in the EFL, and there's the thing, obviously, assessing players as well ahead of January.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why they're taking their time, because I think we remember what happened last season when, you know, they thought they got Mark Bonner in as Paul Warren's replacement, and then they're having to sort of change tack over that. So I can understand why they're being careful about this, and obviously, as with any job at this level, you do get a lot of applicants. So, you know, apart from anything else, you've got to sift through them all. But it does feel a bit of a waste when you sack a manager right at the start of an international break, yeah, to not have anybody in by the end of it. It just feels like either they should have held fire and done a bit more sounding out, or they just should have moved more quickly, because that is a big time. I mean, I remember talking about this the last international break, sort of chastising Sheffield Wednesday for only giving Danny Roll a week of the fortnight, you know, and here they've had none of it at all. And as Leon says, you know, we're very quickly into a busy period and a really important period in terms of, you know, what we're talking about with regards to Bradford and teams like that, in terms of assessing what you need in the January transfer window. So it would be nice to get somebody in early. I mean, certainly somebody of the quality of Gary Rowett, Liam Richardson. I think they'd be good choices. So, you know, you hope they can just press on quickly and get things done, because, you know, they're not in a terrible position by any stretch of the imagination. You know, they're 4 points adrift of Huddersfield Town and safety, but, you know, as Leon said, it's the away form they really need to get their heads around and get addressing. And I do think they've got some work to do in January, because, you know, one of the things that let Mark Taylor down, as well as the away form, the other big issue was injuries. And, it, you know, they clearly need some, frankly, some more robust players in to deal with that. So the sooner a manager is able to see exactly what he needs and what's available in the market, the better. And I do hope, say, that this doesn't drag on and become a bit of a saga, as it felt like it did. It, you know, it probably didn't take as long as it felt, but it felt like it did when Matt Taylor came in.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wopsle, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.